for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll bring you highlights from AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference featuring A. Philip Randolph Institute President Cleola Brown, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees President Lee Saunders, Virginia Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe, and later, a report from Capitol Hill at AFGE's Joint Rally for Jobs with AFSCME. But first, we've been joined by Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa from Hawaii. Congresswoman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and aloha to you and your listeners.
You just gave a fantastic speech to our members here at AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference. Tell me what your main message to them was today.
It's a combination of things, and first of all, thank you for inviting me on your radio show so that I can speak to others as well. You know, the federal workforce has taken the brunt, really the brunt, of the budget crisis. And yes, we can try to justify many of it because we've extended unemployment basically on a pay-go system. And of course, it's come with pay freezes on the employees. And I think that the main message I want to say is that there's not all of us in Congress who are short-sighted. That I believe from the time that I served in the state legislature that the biggest investment and the best investment government makes is in its employees. It's in the people. Because when you strip everything down, right, it is not some program. It is the people who staff the program, and it is the people who serve other people. And that's what makes government work. And until government, whatever you want to say, government, you know, it's almost as bad as saying that we don't really step back and look at it. But until we who make the decisions as to how government operates really recognize that this is our greatest asset, the employee workforce is our greatest asset, and we would be wasting, literally wasting, government resources. Because think about how much it costs, not only in terms of money, but in terms of personal time, the commitments, because it's the commitment that the workforce gives to us that really defines us. All other countries look upon us, and we are still considered the greatest country in the world. We are. And people look upon us, and they look to us for guidance. So how can we lead in the world if we're not able to recognize something as fundamental as the fact that our greatest asset is our workforce? And that's what we've got to preserve and protect.
One of the things that you mentioned in your speech today was that the words inherently governmental, those are good words. Expand upon that a little bit.
Inherently governmental really comes out in terms of the A76 process, which is in the Department of Defense. And what that really does is it says that before you can start talking about outsourcing, privatizing, however you want to look at it, you know that that function that is being considered for outsourcing has, you have to pass this inherently governmental function. In other words, if it's inherently governmental, it cannot go out. In other words, it is something critical to the operations of government that it is government's employees that should do it. The problem that I see happening is the fact that when you don't recognize that government and its employees and its workforce are there to serve a specific purpose for this great country, then you have to first recognize that and realize that there are functions that are done that are inherently governmental and only government employees should do it. And that's the way to look upon it. And that's why I said, hey, it's a good word. Use it as much as you can so people recognize that inherently governmental is positive and it is for the security and the benefit of our great country.
I think it was very clear by the standing ovation that you received from our members that they appreciated your candor and your honesty. And some of the things that you talked about centered around the way that government works and the things that really happen up on Capitol Hill. Do you think that we are, as a nation, effectively moving things forward?
You know, I think that you know, when you we have to look at the last 2 years that I was in Congress, I would like to think that it was not a clear example. But the reason why, because you had Ms. McConnell from the Senate, as well as, you know, even the Republican leadership in the House, their objective was to do one thing, which was to make sure that President Obama did not get reelected. So as a result of that, I think when the politics of it just overran everything else, you know, it just stifled everything, because the objective was not to do anything good. It was not to get us out of the recession. It wasn't to do any of that. It was to make President Obama look bad. So I would like to think that we are moving forward. And I've gone on the floor and I've said many times, you know, President Obama won, so get over it. You know, just get over it. Let's move on. And that's really what people have got to do. I'm talking about people on the other side of the aisle. And I think you're slowly seeing that. You know, for one of the things they said, that on the fiscal cliff vote, for example, and also on the vote on even the raising the debt ceiling, as strange as that was, the fact that on fiscal cliff, that Boehner, Speaker Boehner, who could stop it from coming to the floor, put it on the floor, albeit that he needed the Democrats' votes to pass it, said a lot. And it must be, and you look at the votes, right? Boehner and Paul Ryan up, Cantor and McCarthy down. So it kind of gave everybody cover. I don't care how they do it. The point is they put it on the floor, which means to me we are moving forward, albeit they may be yelling and screaming and scratching along the way. The fact that we voted on it when they could have stopped it is indications that they know that, bottom line, they've got to get these things to the floor.
We're here speaking with Congresswoman Colleen Henabusa from Hawaii. What is your biggest challenge as a member of the House of Representatives advocating for federal employees?
You know, I think the biggest challenge is to not fall prey to the jargon and to be willing to speak up and say to everybody else, if they'll listen to me in a 1 minute, this is jargon. This is just absolute jargon. And when they say things like, you know, we're going to do congressional pay freeze, and we've already frozen it, and the real targets are the federal employees. And I hope federal employees also realize that, because, you know, they're just seeing the surface as well. And I don't take it for granted that everyone is you know, looking at it as carefully, because, you know, let's face it, you're busy earning a living, getting kids to school, you know, making sure you're paying the mortgage, paying your heating bill and whatever else. It's not that it's not important. It's just that people have other priorities. So I think that the challenge is to get that message across as simply and as clearly as they are against us. And that's what it is. They're very good at 30-second sound bites, and they're very good at really just putting these little phrases, and it's catchy, very catchy.
I'm wondering if you can talk to me about maybe your thoughts on changing the conversation so that people understand federal employees are middle-class Americans.
And I think you heard me in the speech, so that I believe that the federal employees are probably a great foundational piece for the middle class. And without the middle class, America does not operate. What I'd like to do, and I'm not doing it because I'm here with you, is to plug the fact that I believe that AFGE should maybe up your radio time. And the reason why is because of the fact that, no, seriously, it's because of the fact that that's important. We are a different kind of age. We are an age of, you know, people are jogging with those cute little nano things in their ears, you know, and people are listening. So what you need to do is you need to increase the airwaves, and people who are sitting in traffic, they're listening to radio. They better not be doing anything else, because they'll cause, but they're listening. So the more that information to get out, that is what it is. And you know, it really is a matter of telling people, hey, I'm your neighbor. I may work for the federal government, but I'm your neighbor. You know, I may go on community watches with you. I'm you. But then when you want to cut things, you think that I'm not effective. I'm, you know, and that's really what it is. It's this image that, unfortunately, a lot of people on the other side of the aisle from me have tried to paint the workers as. But remember, many of them are motivated by one thing. They want to see government just reduce in size. And they think somehow no government is good government. That's absurd. We are in the 21st century. Government is critical, and having a workforce that is inherently governmental is also very important. Look at cybersecurity. I mean, how can you think that somehow that can be outsourced? That's part of us. That is what we are evolving into in terms of a nation. We're already there. But we have to recognize that when we talk about national security, cybersecurity, everything, that we should be actually working towards stabilizing and growing our workforce, especially in those critical areas.
How important is it for members such as ours here at AFGE to be able to come up to Capitol Hill and have access to members such as you and your colleagues to be able to voice their concerns and educate the House and the Senate on their issues?
I think that that's very important. And, you know, I don't care what side of the aisle you are. When somebody is a constituent, they will listen. Like, and those areas such as, for example, I gave the when I was talking about the preservation of PLA, and actually Davis-Bacon as well. Areas that have large workforces, even if they are Republican, they're going to be right there with us. That's why it's not only people who are actually on the same page with you, it's the others that you have to get your members to really start to say, hey, it may not be friendly territory, but you know what? They still got a vote. They still got the vote, and they still can organize back home. So that's your greatest weapon, so to speak, is the fact that people vote, not parties, not super PACs. People vote, and you have people. And never forget that that is not only government's greatest asset, but this union's greatest asset.
As we close out here today, what are your final thoughts with us?
Well, I just want to say thank you. This is an amazing opportunity for someone like me who's, over 30 years as a labor lawyer. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about these issues. I'm very passionate about workers' rights and also the role that unions play. And I would like to have the members and the people who are listening realize that, you know, unions are not bad things. They are not like big corporations like many people have looked upon them as. That the right to act in a concerted manner is to me a fundamental right, and that the more you're able to do that, the better the rest of us are. It is those kinds of actions and movements that really, really gave us the standard of living and the development of that middle class. So why wouldn't it be logical that it is also the strengthening of that movement that will preserve the middle class? So that's what I'm asking everyone to consider.
Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa from Hawaii. Congresswoman, we certainly appreciate your time here today. Thanks for coming by to see us.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference with A. Philip Randolph Institute President Cleola Brown.
AFGE members, has your New Year's fitness resolution fallen by the wayside? Through February 22nd, Purchasing Power can help you recommit to fitness with 15% off all gym equipment, the lowest Purchasing Power price currently available to federal employees. An exclusive member benefit, Purchasing Power allows you to buy brand name items through payroll allotment. Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. Learn how to get your 15% off discount at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Cleola Brown, the president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. Ms. Brown, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
You just gave a rousing speech to our members here at AFGE's annual Civil Rights Luncheon at the Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference. What was your message to the membership today?
To continue to be the strong organization known for its fighting ability that they always have been, and I feel confident that they will be.
Talk to me a little bit about your history with AFGE. You detailed your relationship with National President J. David Cox. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, J. David, before he became the president, in quotes, was always one of the most prolific organizers that I had ever met before. We got a chance to work extensively in the state of North Carolina. And as I told the delegates, without any aspersions being cast on it, watching J. David as a white leader plow into basically almost 100% African-American organizing campaigns outside of the industry that he worked in was something that was reassuring for the rest of us organizers who were in the trenches.
Talk to me a little bit about that organizing piece and how vital it is to an organization.
When we were organizing Cannon Mills in particular, a part of what folk in Kannapolis were used to seeing were out-of-town organizers coming in talking about the union, and they were made to think of us as foreigners. J. David was homegrown, and he was all the way for real. And what that does is give credibility to the life of unionism. He did that and continued to do it for all the years that I've known him.
How has the labor movement impacted your life?
Well, some of the folks in attendance today heard the introductory piece that talked about my mother and I during organizing campaigns in South Carolina. I was 15 when I went to work in the factory, Manhattan Shirt Factory to be more specific. And I give my mother credit for getting me fired from just about every job that I ever worked until I was 20 years old. She has and remains to this day to be one of the most outspoken, worker, positive people that I've ever known in my life. And for black women in the South, white women in the South, any female in the South, to demand a leadership role and take it, not be given it, was something that I was always very proud of. She represents that to me, and so many other women in the labor movement do.
So many times our first job or one of our first jobs really impacts us and our outlook on life. At the age of 15, I suspect that your position at the Manhattan Shirt Factory did that for you.
Absolutely. I watched as women who were twice and three times my age took, excuse the language, crap from folks that were a lot less smart than they were. And I watched as the light got turned on in their eyes when the explanation of what belonging to a trade union organization could do for them. I saw what fight looks like when it comes alive for the first time. I never wanted to forget that. And I've been blessed. I've been a trade unionist for 43 years, and every day I get a brand new surprise and a reward for being one.
As we look back and talk about your career in the labor movement and then come up to today, talk to me about why the labor movement is needed now more than ever.
Well, I think if you watch television for more than 20 minutes, it becomes quite clear. When you look at a state like Michigan, where the fight had been fought for so long to become a state where recognition is automatic, watch it turn into a right to work for less state. The wonderment of what's going on becomes real clear. When you look at Wisconsin, you know that the need for trade unionism is even more vital today than it ever has been. But when you look at folks like the Occupy Young Folk, that just got out there not waiting for any leader, any brand name or title, and started to do that and push the labor movement into a revitalized state. You know that being coming and staying an activist is something that's absolutely necessary every day and today more than ever.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Cleola Brown, the president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. Ms. Brown, let's talk a little bit about the federal sector and the challenges that federal employees face.
Well, you know, it's easy to divide people sometimes when you talk only about money. And because the economy is what it is right now, the opposition, and I call them that because to me that's exactly what they are, will start to talk about the kinds of wages and salaries and benefits that government employees receive. And folk who are struggling without those same things sometimes will say, I don't understand what they're doing. They're already living real well. But they don't understand that pieces like a furlough at 22 days is something that impacts not just their end of the week or end of the month or end of the year, bottom line. It's something that affects their pensions, where time is not accrued for that time of service. And it's unbelievable how quickly we fall for the okey-doke. Take a look at that person, not at what they're earning, but the fact that they are a worker who deserves fair pay for the wages, fair wages for the work that they do, and the labor that they give out should be compensated at a level that they're entitled to.
What do you think it's going to take to make people realize that point that you just made?
I think it's going to mean a lot more open talk, and AFGE has been a leader in that, breaking stuff down to real language, human speak, so that people will see and recognize that that's your brother, your cousin, your aunt, your uncle, anybody that could be related to you that provides the services for you, and then bringing it home. If these kinds of changes take place, when you get to the airport, your service will not be the same because those same workers will be on furlough. And if you think the lines are long now, wait for the furlough, baby. You know, and every aspect of what the workers from AFGE gives to this society of ours impacts everybody's life. It's not just theirs, but the convenience that we enjoy and have become accustomed to, that disappears with some of the sacrifices that they're asking these workers to take. So it's not just their sacrifice. You will be sacrificing as a regular citizen of the United States as well. When they get hurt, we hurt.
During your address today at the luncheon, you mentioned the re-election of President Obama. What are you hoping and expecting to see from him in the next 4 years?
I am hoping, and beyond hope, I am expecting that the commitments that got made early on will be lived up to. I would hope that the appreciation for women would be expanded by inclusion in the decision-making component of his cabinet and the auxiliary units that help to advise him, because women are smart. We can give him some good, sound advice. I would hope that the issues of immigration get dealt with very quickly in a real way. I would also hope that as we look at our borders, that the humanity that goes along with that does not get lost in the mix, because that's an obligation that we have as the nation that's known for freedom and for rights. We have to do that in a real way. So that's my expectation, because that was the promise that got made.
One of the things that we have discussed on this program before is the need to encourage women to run for public office and feel comfortable doing that. And you just mentioned hopefully President Obama will include more women in his cabinet or within his administration. Detail for me some of the unique perspectives and unique talents that women have that they can bring to the table to help move the country forward.
Well, I think that a firsthand example of the difference that it made in looking at him for who he really is got done very early on in his career when he did the Lilly Ledbetter piece. Women who had never even thought about being political stood up and says, okay, maybe he is the one that will understand that we bring something to the table. Another portion of that is looking at the strong role that our First Lady Michelle Obama plays in reaching into elements that were traditionally looked at as a man's role. She is so committed to what happens to veterans and does an excellent job of raising the consciousness. I am so reminded of Eleanor Roosevelt when I look at our First Lady today. And it gives you that kind of security and warmth to know that someone with the kind of compassion that she brings forward will also continue to be addressed. But it is he who was elected as President of the United States. And it is he who has to make a real space for women in his decision-making body, because all of what we do is reflected on the children and our children's children, from education to our health care. And those two components, he said very early on, were very important to him. I want to see it. I just don't want to hear it.
Tell me a little bit more about the future in 2013 for the A. Philip Randolph Institute. What do you have planned as you lead the organization forward?
Organize, organize, and organize.
I've heard that somewhere before.
It is still as relevant today as it always has been.
So your focus really is going to be on bringing more members into the fold and pushing the organization forward?
That, but more importantly, bringing the message of Randolph and Ruston and Hill to the forefront of the requirements of the legacy that got left by those three in the formation of our organization, so we never forget.
Of course, as you know, we are here today at AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference. Legislatively speaking, what do you think is of a priority for working families, working people?
I don't know that I ever really separate civil and human rights from workers' rights. So all of the issues that are front and center for us becomes the issue for working people. We have on the 27th of February, on the steps of the Supreme Court, a joint effort that will be lifted up by all of the elements that you mentioned around Voting Rights Act. I hope that people will show up there for that. We have the commemoration, the 50th, of the March on Washington, which spoke to the issue of jobs and freedom, which is so very relevant today. We have, during the course of August, the commemoration of the March on Washington, and there will be thousands of people that will be here in the nation's capital to make clear the reminder of the struggle that's ahead. That includes labor, that includes civil rights, that includes women rights. So I think that that joint concern is still there.
If our listeners would like to participate or learn more about it, can they find you somewhere online to get some information?
You can go to www.apri.org, and there will be the information.
Final thoughts here for you today, Ms. Brown.
Eat all your vegetables. Include in that some collard greens, a little bit of the pot liquor, and stay as strong as you possibly can, because the job is unfinished, and you are the warrior that must complete that work.
Cleola Brown, the president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. Ms. Brown, it was a pleasure meeting you today. Thank you for coming on the program.
My pleasure, and thank you very much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference with American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees President Lee Saunders.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
AFGE members, has your New Year's fitness resolution fallen by the wayside? Through February 22nd, Purchasing Power can help you recommit to fitness with 15% off all gym equipment, the lowest Purchasing Power price currently available to federal employees. An exclusive member benefit, Purchasing Power allows you to buy brand name items through payroll allotment. Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. Learn how to get your 15% off discount at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Lee Saunders, the president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Mr. Saunders, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You just addressed the crowd here today at AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference. What was your message to them?
Well, my message is that we've got to stand tall, and that we cannot shy away from the fights that face all of us, not only as far as union members are concerned and the attacks on federal services and public services across the country, but we've got to stand up tall to fight for working families all over this country. We're under attack like never before. I've been with the labor movement for 36 years, and I've never seen the viciousness of these attacks by the Koch brothers and the top 1% of this country who simply want more wealth and power at our expense, and we've got to fight back and make our voices heard.
Clearly, you're aware at the state level the attacks against government employees. How do you respond to some of those attacks and some of the things that are said about state workers?
Well, we've just got to mobilize and educate and organize our members. And we've got to talk about the important work that we do, whether it's an emergency. When Sandy hit, who were the first on the scene? It was public service workers. And 9/11, when I was up in New York, our offices were a couple of blocks away from the Trade Center. The first people at Ground Zero were public service workers, people who risked their lives, not only then, but every single day to perform vital services for the citizens of this great country of ours. And I think we've got to get that message out. But we've also got to get a message out of working families deserve a break. And there's got to be a level playing field. And it's unfair, completely unfair, that the top 1% continue to try to control so much wealth and power at the expense of our members and the expense of working families.
How important is it for unions like AFSCME, like AFGE, to have weeks like this where the members go to Capitol Hill to have their voices heard?
I think it's extremely important. As a matter of fact, the UAW was in town last week. They had a major legislative conference. They had about 1,000 people here in D.C. Your legislative conference is happening at the same time our legislative conference is going on. So we've got about 700 folks here. We're going to be going on the Hill, and we're going to be making our voices heard and talking to those legislators who we helped get into office. And I've got to be very clear about this. If they don't want to help us, then we should not provide our important resources, our necessary resources, and the boots on the ground to help them. We've got to draw a line in the sand now. And those who we have supported historically for many, many years, it's time for them to support us.
When you take that message to Capitol Hill, what kind of response do you receive?
Well, some, I think it frightens them. But we've got to become more militant. And we've got to become more aggressive in the way that we do things. And we've got to go back to the old rule of being troublemakers, to be quite honest with you. We've got to hold people to a standard and hold them accountable. If they don't like it, tough. But that's, I mean, we work too hard. We support them too much, give them too much money for them to just ignore us and kick the can down the road. And we've got to make them understand that there's going to be a consequence if they don't support the work that we do.
For your members at AFSCME, what's a top one or two challenges that they face in the workplace?
Well, I mean, privatization. Just as the federal workers face privatizing public services, that's a major issue for us. And that attempt is growing more and more in state and local governments. And then, obviously, the attack on our pensions. I mean, folks are really coming after our defined pension program. We've got to fight back like never before, not only to define and to defend our pensions, but we've got to enter into a discussion, I believe, across this country that we should not be a country that rushes to the bottom, that we've got to talk about, just as we did, we talked about health care for all, and we got health care reform passed. I think we've got to have a national dialogue and a national push for retirement for all, because we're a better country than reducing the retirement levels of actives and retirees, actives when they move into retirement. We're a better country than that. We should not be a country about rushing to the bottom.
Do you think that it's lost upon the public that government workers are middle-class Americans?
I think that we've got to promote the work that we do. And if we don't promote it, nobody else will. And we've got to talk about the important services that we provide as federal workers and as state and local government workers. I mean, we've got to really talk to the press. We've got to communicate to the decision makers and the elected officials about the important work that we do. You know, we've been put in a box where many politicians call us the privileged class. The privileged class, when in fact we're trying to build a better life for our families and for America. And we aren't making a ton of money. I mean, our average salary within AFSCME is about $42,000 a year. Our average retirement, when our members retire, is $19,000 a year. That is not the privileged class. So that's folks who have been trying to play by the rules every single day, and they deserve a decent retirement.
And that $42,000 a year many times is one earner for a family of four or more.
That's exactly right. I mean, and it's we've really let them define the argument, and we've got to break away. And they've been successful in dividing and conquering us. And we've got to – that's so why it's so important for AFSCME and AFGE to work together and bring the union family and working together, push aside the differences that we have, and bring our natural allies together and bring them at the same table, whether it's seniors and retirees or students, civil rights organizations, the faith-based community, communities who think like us, who believe in the same and have the same kinds of values that we have. We've got to come together like never before and work together and work on everyone's issues together so we can fight back.
Lee Saunders, the president of AFSCME. Mr. Saunders, thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference with Virginia Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McCullough.
AFGE members, has your New Year's fitness resolution fallen by the wayside? Through February 22nd, Purchasing Power can help you recommit to fitness with 15% off all gym equipment, the lowest Purchasing Power price currently available to federal employees. An exclusive member benefit, Purchasing Power allows you to buy brand name items through payroll allotment. Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. Learn how to get your 15% off discount at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Terry McCullough, the Democratic candidate for the governor of Virginia. Terry, welcome back to the program.
Jason, good to be back with you.
You just gave a speech to AFGE's members of the 4th and 14th District. What was your message to them this morning?
Well, my message is, listen, we need a governor of Virginia who's going to fight for them, a governor who's going to fight for jobs, economic development, growing our economy. You know, there's going to be a real contrast in our election. I'm running against someone who just wrote a book, said we should end Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, thinks we ought to shut every public swimming pool down. There's a real stark contrast. Someone who's trying to create economic opportunities for families and one who's trying to do a divisive ideological agenda that's going to separate us and make Virginia a laughingstock as it was with some of the legislation that they tried to pass last year. Let's unite people. Let's get people working together. Let's get past this sequestration. We got to have people, folks, working together, solving problems. You talk about family values. I'm talking about a job so that a parent can take care of their family.
Let's talk about some of the specifics in your plan. What's the best way to create job growth in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Well, as someone who, you know, I started my first business, I told the story in there when I was 14 years old, started a driveway business because I was going to have to help pay for college. I've been involved in business my whole life. I know what it is to create jobs, common sense, pro-business ideas. In order to do it as governor of Virginia, my product would be Virginia, and I need to sell that. I'm competing against 200 other nations. I'm competing, as you know, against 49 other states. We need an education system that works, a transportation system that works. We need to make sure we have efficiencies, and we need focus. And on transportation, we have real challenges. We waste 70 hours a week in Northern Virginia, a year stuck in traffic. We waste about 43 hours stuck in traffic in Hampton Roads. We waste about $1.7 billion just stuck in traffic. We need a governor who's going to come up with a real program to create economic activity to deal with the transportation mess that we're in Virginia today. Virginia in 2017 will no longer be able to apply for federal highway matching funds because we don't have the dollar to put up. It matches $4 in the federal government. Billions of dollars of your taxpayer money, if you live in Virginia, that goes to the federal government is not coming back to Virginia because we have been irresponsible. We have kicked the can down the road. We have not shown leadership to make sure that we have money in our construction account so that we can apply and win federal highway matching funds.
I know that you've seen the reports about the D.C. area being the heaviest traffic area in the country, people spending the most time in traffic, as you mentioned, 70 hours in the Northern Virginia area. What role will mass transportation, high-speed rail play in alleviating some of these traffic concerns?
Well, I think it's very important. It's a stark contrast. My opponent, Ken Cuccinelli, was against the Silver Line, which is, as you know, now taking us Dulles Airport into Loudoun. The mass transit, first of all, it gets cars off the road. The mass transit also creates tremendous economic opportunities around the metro station and so forth. So I have always been a big advocate. Let's get as many cars as we can off the road, get people into mass transit, high speed, higher speed rail, more functioning bus service. There's many things that we ought to do. It goes back to quality of life. We are stuck in traffic. You know, I live in Northern Virginia. I've lived in the same house for 21 years. When I first moved out here, it was no problem. I have 5 children. I really have to do a lot of planning now to go see one of my children's ball games in the afternoon if I'm going to a soccer or a baseball or a football game. It's an ordeal now, and I speak for every family in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. It affects your quality of life, and we've got to get serious about this. Because people get up and say, I'm tired of being stuck in traffic. It affects not only my economic, but also my whole quality of life issue. I'm going to move to another state where traffic isn't so congested.
So that's a message that you're getting from the residents, is that they could potentially leave and just pack up and go.
Not pack up and go to where it's a more functioning, less congested road system. And secondly, business. In order to grow our economy, we need to build the small businesses here, but we need to bring in businesses from around the world. Do you want to come into an area that over 70 hours a year you're going to be sitting in your car on a highway? I don't think so. I'll easily go to North Carolina or some other place where the traffic is nowhere near as congested as ours. We got to understand, we are trying, with the decisions we make today will affect the next 10, 15, 20 years. That's what we have to look at long term. Let's take the American Legion Bridge. The only way you're going to get from Maryland to Northern Virginia, one bridge. In 19 years, that is what they figure is the lifespan left for the American Legion Bridge. So what do you do in 19 years if we haven't thought about building another bridge over the Potomac? We have to begin to be thinking down the road is to deal with the commerce and quality of life issues.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate for the governor of Virginia. Terry, let's talk about federal employees. As you know, Virginia is loaded with federal employees, particularly in this Northern Virginia area. What message would you like to send to them today?
Well, listen, we all need to work together. First of all, this insanity of sequestration that they're talking about, that is because the political parties could not work together, and they came up with this draconian hammer that if they couldn't get together, and it would be so onerous that it would never occur. Well, you know what? We're about 2.5 weeks from it actually could occur, and it's because of our political parties cannot work together, and that's why I'm running for governor. We need rational folks to come in with common sense, and listen, I can reach across the aisle. I will work with anybody. Jobs are not a partisan political issue, nor should they be. We need Democrats and Republicans, and they got to start doing that up in Congress today. Compromise is not a bad word, Jason. I have to do it every day. I do it in business. My wife, she doesn't, everything I ask for, you don't get. I mean, that's just life. We all deal with that at home. And so we need more of that common sense approach in government. So I promise you as governor, but this insanity that we have going on today, we got to have some common sense approach. And that's why I'm running for governor. And to the employees out there, I am embarrassed, and I apologize that our government is treating the folks, our government employees, the way they are. And we're always using government employees as the whipping boys. We always talk about them. We got to stop that. We got hardworking folks in our federal workforce, and we should be proud of what they do every single day. And, I want you to know that I'll fight for you.
What's your analysis of the political climate in Washington these days? You obviously have a long history in politics,
yep,
running the Democratic National Committee. You've worked on campaigns, President Clinton, Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
Have you ever seen anything like this before?
No, I've never seen it. The environment is as poisonous as I've ever seen, which is very unfortunate. I remember, I came down here as a young man to go to college and law school, and I actually did some work with Tip O'Neill. And I always remember Tip O'Neill would, he and Bob Michael, who was the House leader of the Republican, boy, they'd fight like cats and dogs all day. But I tell you, at 6 o'clock at the end of the day, they would put that ideological partisan, but they believed in it. They put it aside, and they went out and had a cigar and a drink together. You just don't see that anymore. People, I have very good friends. Eddie Gillespie, who is former chairman of the Republican National Committee and a Virginia resident, he and I are very good friends. We were just the other day had a drink together. People just don't get along anymore. We got to get people to work together, to coexist together. But what's going on Capitol Hill today? And I think one of my theories is this partisan redistricting that has gone on, where they're drawing these lines where you're guaranteed to win in reelection, such that last year about 80 members of Congress actually had a competitive election out of 435. So 20%. Those other 80%, there's no incentive for them to work with the other side because they're guaranteed to win in election again. And the only way you can lose an election now is to get a challenge within your own primary. So it pushes people to the right. It pushes people to the left. And to the point that there's nothing left in the middle, we got to get people back working together. I say this, it is important. As running for governor of Virginia, we all need to work together. Because I know as governor, if you want me to bring in jobs from around the world, I am competing against 200 other nations around the world who are out putting their best foot forward. We have to put our best foot forward. And having folks like Ken Cuccinelli, who has a divisive ideological agenda, that is not welcoming. That is putting walls up around Virginia. We need to make sure we're welcoming to everybody because, as I say, I want my 5 children to stay here in Virginia. I want them to have jobs here. I want them to have children. I apologize. I'm selfish. I want my grandchildren to be close to me. I speak for every parent out there. But in order to do that, we got to have robust economic activity, robust, diverse job growth. In order to do that, you need a transportation system that works, an education system that's delivering. It's doable. We can do it, but we got to do it. Mainstream ideas, people working together.
Let's touch on that education piece just for a minute and tell me your plan, because we've seen statistics about the United States dropping in education rankings. What's it going to take overall for the country to move forward, and in particular for Virginians?
Yeah. And our funding has gone down consistently, as you know, since 2008. If you look in 2009, if you look at the Leave No Child Behind student progress, our school divisions in Virginia, we had 60 that were meeting the student progress reports. 2 years later, we were down to only 4. We need to make sure that we're paying our teachers what they're worth. We got to stop this demonizing of teachers. We need to make sure we keep our best teachers here. They need to be accountable and make sure they're delivering what we need, because we have to have an education system, workforce development. So our K through 12, we have to have the best teachers in the classroom. I'm big on the community college system in Virginia. 3 out of 5 of our Virginians who get a higher education go through our community college system. We have 23 community colleges and 40 campuses throughout the Commonwealth. Everybody's within an hour's drive. We need to put more funds into the community college system. We need to make financial aid as available to our students who want to go to the community colleges. But that should be our workforce development opportunities, matching jobs of the future to the training and the skills that we will teach at the community college. We need to be more working together so that we're actually training, teaching folks what they're going to need when they get out, and there's a job waiting for them with the skills that they have been taught. Too many of our students will go to a 4-year institution, they'll run up this gigantic debt, and they're not being trained for the jobs that are out there, and now they're stuck with a gigantic debt. We got to refigure all that out to make sure we're teaching in sophomore year of your 4-year institution. We ought to be telling you and helping work with you to pick a major where there's going to be jobs down the road in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So education, for me, it's workforce development, it's workforce training, getting our students trained so that they know what they need to do to match what the jobs of the future are going to be.
Lastly, Terry, if you're elected governor, what is your first order of business in office?
I would like, my first order of business is going to be name my Secretary of Economic Development, the person who's going to be responsible every single day, who's going to work with me around the clock to say, here are the opportunities to bring business to Virginia. Here are the opportunities to grow the small businesses. Here's what we need to do. That will be my first order of business, because I go back to my basic point. I'm all about jobs and economic development. Everything we talk about, family values and all that, comes back to the issue, do people have jobs, and are there jobs there for our children? And as governor, that's my focus. I'll let Ken Cuccinelli deal with the social ideological issues. I'm focused on getting you a job. I want to be the job creator in chief.
Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate for the governor of Virginia. Terry, great to see you again.
Jason, good to be with you. You bet. Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll take you to Capitol Hill for AFGE's joint rally for jobs with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
AFGE members, has your New Year's fitness resolution fallen by the wayside? Through February 22nd, Purchasing Power can help you recommit to fitness with 15% off all gym equipment, the lowest Purchasing Power price currently available to federal employees. An exclusive member benefit, Purchasing Power allows you to buy brand name items through payroll allotment. Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. Learn how to get your 15% off discount at afge.org/purchasingpower.
That was the message activists from the American Federation of Government Employees and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees took to Capitol Hill this week as they urged Congress to shield vital government programs and services from devastating budget cuts. The two largest unions representing government employees at the local, state, and federal levels organized the rally to protect Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other programs that are critical to the health, safety, and welfare of all Americans. AFGE National President J. David Cox spoke about the essential services federal agencies provide.
We're guarding this country and protecting it against the most dangerous criminals in the world. So you want us to not be there and those people be out? We're guarding the borders. Somebody right now is processing Social Security claims for our senior citizens and for children in need. Those things are happening. We won't be there on the job doing that. There won't be people in county services and city services, all of those things, firemen, firefighters, they're all affected by the sequestration.
Geddes Scott, who represents workers at AFGE's Department of Veterans Affairs, Local 1988 in New York, echoed that sentiment and discussed the impact sequestration would have on the VA.
Well, at the VA, I mean, we predominantly take care of vets, and anything that affects DOD affects the vets, because DOD are our vets, and we provide the care, the nurses. So if you affect the DOD, the military men, then you affect the nurses that provide care for the military men. Then you affect VBA. Those are the claims. So it's one hand washes the other, and both of them wash the face.
Carolyn Fedoroff, vice president of AFGE's Housing and Urban Development Council 222, wants to see tax code reform, not entitlement reform.
I'm here to protest the interest in entitlement reform, where it's completely focused on Social Security and Medicare. We need tax code entitlement reform. Alan Greenspan talked about tax code entitlement as being mortgage home loan deductions for houses of $1 million and more for second homes. That more than 25% of our tax code entitlements go to only the richest 1% in this country, and yet 60% of Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits go to the middle 60% of our incomes in this country. We don't need Social Security or Medicare entitlement reform. We need tax code entitlement reform.
Lastly, Congressman Chris Van Hollen concluded the rally with a special message for federal employees.
We respect federal employees. They have borne an unfair portion of the burden for deficit reduction. So far, they're willing to do their share, but it's not fair to ask them to bear this burden alone. And we need to replace the sequester. Allowing the sequester to go in effect would be absolutely reckless economic policy. It would result in the loss of hundreds of thousands of jobs, and it would cause huge disruption throughout the country, as you see, you know, people being furloughed, whether they're air traffic controllers, nurses at our veterans hospitals, food safety inspectors, folks doing important research at NIH to find cures and treatments for diseases. It would wreak havoc and would be very bad for the economy. So that's why we've proposed an alternative, a balanced alternative that combines targeted cuts over a longer period of time with revenue from closing tax breaks for special interests and very wealthy people.
Do you think that the American people realize or understand that most federal employees are middle-class Americans just like them?
I think there's been so much demagoguery in Washington against federal employees that people get the sense that, you know, these are a bunch of faceless bureaucrats, when in fact these are the people on the front lines of our veterans hospitals, the nurses. These are the people who are in the air traffic control towers. These are the people with the FBI who helped rescue that boy in Alabama. I mean, these are people who are doing border security work every day. These are middle-class Americans, and it is absolutely unfair to balance the budget totally on their backs, as many of our Republicans propose to do.
What time is it? Union time. What time is it? Union time. What time is it?
Thank you to our guests this week, Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa, A. Philip Randolph Institute President Cleola Brown, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees President Lee Saunders, and Virginia Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, W.